Hey everyone, it's Rich. Web3, also referred to as Web 3.0. It's a vision for a new type of World Wide Web that puts you, the user, in the driver's seat. In other words, democratizing the web. It incorporates concepts like decentralization, blockchain technologies, and token-based economies. Could I interest you in some NFTs? It's essentially the opposite of Web 2.0, where data and content are centralized within a small collection of companies, sometimes referred to as big tech. In Web 2.0, this centralization of data, including passwords and very sensitive, personally identifiable information, is often exposed as the result of data breaches. In fact, AT&T recently discovered that the personal information of more than 70 million current and former customers were being sold on the dark web. No, storing millions of people's personal data in giant databases is not a great idea. However, with countless stories constantly flooding the news about the pervasiveness of fraud in cryptocurrency markets, the term Web3 has become a bit of a PR nightmare. Web3 has developed such a stigma that in 2022, Twitter and Block co-founder Jack Dorsey introduced the term Web5, with a promise of an extra decentralized web platform. But in the end, it's probably all just marketing terms and semantics. The salient point here is that it's time to put the individual in control of their own data and identity. And our guest today is on a mission to help make this possible. Daniel Harris is the founder and CEO of Kendra.io, an independent nonprofit research project building free, open-source software with data privacy and autonomy at its core. Their flagship product, the Kendra.io app, is a highly customizable no-code environment to explore how people can interact with technology with more personal control. The focus is on user-centric design, data portability, privacy, interoperability, and user-configurable interfaces. And this is not Daniel's first rodeo. In 1996, Daniel co-founded CerberNet, which grew to become the UK's leading independent broadband internet service provider. Cheers to those who are taking great risks to make the world a better place. You're listening to Privacy Files. This episode is brought to you by Anonymy Labs, makers of MySudo, the world's only all-in-one privacy app, and Sudo Platform, the cloud-based platform companies turn to for seamlessly integrating identity protection solutions into their software. And have you heard about the MySudo web browser extension? Breaking your online data trail just got way easier. To learn more, visit mysudo.com. That's mysudo.com. Daniel, welcome to Privacy Files.
Hi, Rich. It's great to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be this exciting topic because you're in the software development space and applications and creating open source technology. So this is one of the topics I've been looking to dive into. So let's start out just with the founding. So what kind of led you down this path to create this company, which is pronounced Kendra.io?
It all started in the mid-90s when I was running an internet company. And we were approached by a university to investigate a new distribution system for music and for media. And at the time, I had a lot of friends who were filmmakers and musicians. And really, there was a lot of frustration around how difficult it was to get their music out there. So combined with the research project, we kind of put all of this stuff together. And we came up with Kendra.io.
And how tough is it? Because I know it's, you hear the democratization of X, Y, Z, that term gets used a lot. But it seems like in one way, it's easier to get your music out there because if you've got an internet connection and a computer, you're good to go. But on the flip side, it's more difficult because you're competing against a whole host of people that you never would have been competing against prior to the old model where you had these very tight channels of distribution for music and movies and on and on.
Well, basically, It's very complicated. It's an extremely varied landscape out there about how you get your music or your content out there. And the original motivation behind what we were doing with Kendra.io was to make it a lot easier to access and manage all your data in multiple places, because you have to use service providers to get your content out there. You have to go to aggregators, you know, use the social media networks. If you want to get your gigs out there, you have to use gigs listing sites like Bands in Town. So it's really complicated. And it's a lot for an artist who just wants to make art. It's a lot for them to manage, you know.
I guess I'm also interested, too, in all the other applications that you foresee this technology being utilized for. But maybe let's start with just the music use case. And so how does this work in practice? If somebody is a musician who's trying to get their music out there, what do they have to do to lean on this tool to make their lives easier?
Yeah, maybe it's best if I start by talking about what the tool is and how it works. Would that be a good thing?
So
we've been through many iterations across the time period, and obviously it's over 20 years of work, and we've ended up with an application that plugs into different service providers via their APIs. And what this enables us to do is be in control of the data that we want to manage and push it out to these service providers. So some service providers might be listing gigs or distributing your music or just managing social notifications to your fans. So all of these sort of service providers kind of sometimes do a similar job. They replicate the functionality. And so artists end up having to, or many of us end up having to, copy data from one place to another, slightly change it because the format's slightly different. And what our app does is understand what's happening at the service provider end and also what's happening at the user end, and translates between them, so that a lot of the drudgery of translating into different formats goes away, and you can just click a button and it gets your gigs out there. And that's really the aim of what we're doing.
Yeah, wow, very efficient. So you're really only having to manage everything through one interface.
That's the idea, yes. That's one of the central ideas about what we're building.
And
yes.
I think in the background, I might see a guitar there. So you probably have a little bit of a music background yourself.
Yeah, I've been playing music since I was 11 and writing songs. And I love singing songs and making up songs. I don't necessarily gig that much, but I find it's a real good meditation for myself. You know, it's actually really centering.
Yeah, well, good for you. Yeah. I guess there's a privacy angle to this too. How does that work?
Sure. Well, what we discovered when we started building this app that would enable you to store all your first-class data locally with, you know, in your control, and then send out the songs or the gigs to multiple places. So you're not storing the first-class data on these service providers. They take a copy of your data, but you are in control of the master data in a sense. So we were doing this for the music industry and the media industry, and we thought, this is actually transferable to many other sectors where a user has to interact with lots of service providers, sometimes replicating the information that they're putting out there. And I should also mention that we're nonprofit. So we don't have the same profit motive that every other startup has, you know. So that also introduces another interesting twist onto how we create this technology. We're giving away this technology for free. It's all open source.
And how's that work though? So you're getting grants or donations? How does the funding come through?
Yeah, Kendra.io is funded in the main by research grants from international bodies or governments. We've received actually grants from Google as well. So some industry bodies have given us grant money. It's research money. So it's not investment in the traditional VC sense. And we also take donations from philanthropists and just people on the street, really, that are happy to support us.
I'm curious, that what was Google's angle on that? Or was it just, are they interested maybe in the future? Maybe they're going to gobble you up at some point? Or
okay, so I have to step back again and explain that we're really creating a framework for building mini applications that are basically enabling users to maintain control of their data. And Google were really interested in how we would verify information that was being sent around the web. So there was a lot of interest at the time, and there still is, about fake news and about how to find fake news and how to, you know, analyze news and see if it's fake or not. And we took the opposite sort of route, and we were saying, well, let's tag true news. So we were building a system where you could add metadata to any object that was out there, be it an image or a piece of text, to say, yeah, this was me. In effect, digitally signing these objects, and then have a verification methodology around that. So that's what Google was interested in. And again, I'll explain why it's interesting being nonprofit is we don't have to ship a widget or a thing that you then pay for or hire. We can do little bits of technology all over the place to enhance what's currently out there. So this wasn't an app in itself. It was a piece of technology that could be actually used by many different services or apps.
Very cool. That's interesting. So yeah. What are some other applications that you're seeing for this particular technology right now?
So as I say, when we started building applications that were very much focused on artists managing their digital lives and having a dashboard of all of their songs, and then being able to take those songs and push them out to various places. And that was our focus at the time. And then we realized that what we could do is turn it around. So it wasn't just professionals getting out to fans. It could also come from end users managing their vendors. So a really interesting example that we recently discovered was, what if you're shopping and you want to go to multiple shops and you want to have one shopping experience? I mean, how many times do we go to a new shop, or we find something on Google, we want to get it, it's a new shop, I have to sign up again, it's a whole process. Oh, it looks different, the interface is different. I'm going nuts with all the different interfaces I have to learn and keep tabs of, you know. So why can't I just have one interface that they all come to me and it's unified for me? So I'm not having to run around learning their interfaces, and I can manage my own interface and plug into all of those shops. And it's a little bit like the business model for Etsy or Amazon. They do that job of interacting with all of those shops and then harmonizing that interface. But we're saying, let the end user decide what that interface looks like.
So that's interesting then. So is there there's just one password for all of this?
No, you still have to, at this stage, at least at this stage in the game, you still have to have a login to all of these shops. So we haven't solved all the problems yet, but at least once you have that account, you can basically log into that account via the app. And that gives you a unified shopping experience from then on. And also you can alter your interface. That's part of this app that I really should explain, is it's also a no-code app, which means you can change the app look and feel and even the logic as you're in the app. The nearest analogy that I've got is it's like Excel. You know, you can put in a column of data, and then you can add another column of data, and then you can pivot that around, you can make a graph, and it's all in real time. You don't have to compile it and then put it through an app store and then download it onto your phone. So what we're kind of saying is, this is what it would look like if Excel wasn't just building spreadsheets, but was building applications.
Let's take a quick break for this message from our sponsor.
Ugh, not again. I can't find it anywhere.
What's got you so frustrated?
Hi, Bob. Just trying to find an important email, but my inbox is a disaster. It's all ads and spam. It's exhausting.
Sounds like you need somewhat of an inbox intervention. Have you heard of MySudo?
MySudo? No, what's that?
It's an awesome app where you can create a pseudo. It's kind of like a digital alias. Each of these pseudos comes with its own email to help you organize your digital life. It's the perfect tool to keep your personal and work emails spam-free.
So what you're saying is I can use one of these pseudo emails and never have to worry about spamming up my personal or work email?
Yep. Plus, it's super secure. You should download it.
Downloading as we speak. You are a lifesaver.
Don't let spam emails take over your life. Reclaim your inbox with MySudo. Download MySudo today and start your journey to a clutter-free digital world. Visit MySudo.com and remember, stay private.
So I guess my mind's going all over the place here, just trying to think about the different paths. But so if you're using it in a shopping use case, that means you still have full access to all the products that are being sold at one time, or are you curating that as well?
Well, the really interesting thing that we discovered when we started thinking about, we don't have to do this just for musicians, we can actually build different experiences for end users. We discovered how many services have APIs. So what this means, I should explain, API is an application programmable interface. It's a different way to get into a service other than a website or an application. So it's kind of a third way. And we discovered that so many services out there have APIs because they need them in their own right for building their own applications. And they offer these APIs out to other developers to create applications as well and to mash up data.
I guess I was just trying to understand, like, if you are using this in a shopping use case, I'm sure, do you have access? I guess what I'm trying to understand is, do you have access to everything that's on a particular website, or are you curating categories of content, categories of products that will be available to you?
Right. So when you're on, say, for example, a shopping experience, you can see exactly what the API gives you access to, and that's pretty much always going to be everything. So you can filter it down with searches, just as you would do on Etsy or Amazon. You would filter it down to a smaller bunch of things that you could look at. But the really interesting thing about this, and I think this is where privacy comes into it, is there are no cookies in this, right? Because this is an application, it's not a browser. Browsers have become very, very complicated with lots of loopholes, and that's why they're always having to do security issues. But with this, it's very simple. It's just via an API. And so we don't get, there are no cookies residing on your application. You just ask a question, find me these products, it sends it back to you. And then you can list them locally. Then you can actually interrogate the list locally without having to even ask the server any more questions. So it's like that grid in the Excel spreadsheet. You've got it. It's there. It's yours. It's local. You know, you don't need to ask anyone else to, you know, please list it alphabetically. You can do that yourself. And I think that's part of the aspect that we really started understanding, that this is what we were building, was it's about freedom for end users to not only own the data, but also own the process around the data and the interface around the process and the data.
That's amazing. That really fits in with the whole Web3 concept of putting the control back into the individual's hands. So I love that.
What became apparent, and it wasn't our original focus 20 odd years ago, what became apparent is the interface is key. And what happens when you move control of the interface from the service provider to the end user? And even that as a concept is a bit weird. Like, what does that mean and how does it work? Well, there are clues about how it could work. In fact, I'm going to come back to Excel. You know, so much of the interface is in the hands of the user. But there are also so many tools out there, like I said, no-code tools that enable non-developers to build applications by drag and drop and things like that. And there's a lot that can be done without having to be a developer. And that becomes really interesting.
Yeah, there was, this reminds me actually, several years ago, I remember seeing some articles written on this, and I haven't seen this in practice yet. There was a company that was working on the technology where they were trying to overlay the ability to actually write comments on news sites or even Facebook or whatever, but it wasn't under the control of Facebook or Twitter or whatever, you know, you pick your news site. And that way they were trying to fight back against censorship or, you know, whoever the moderator is, and there would be nothing that those sites could do about it. And that way it was, again, it was trying to put control back into the hands of the user. But it sounds kind of like that's what you're doing here. It sounds like there's so many options and you've really opened up this door for so many potential applications. This is fascinating.
I know. I'm afraid we have opened up the door just by thinking of things in a slightly different way. And I do remember that service provider. I can't remember the name, but I do remember the service that was about sharing. It was basically augmented data. We like using that word augmented data. You know, it's not augmented reality where you've got an overlay, but it's just data that you can add on to someone else's data. And they can't actually stop you. They can't control that those annotations that you're making. And then you can share those with your friends or, you know, work colleagues or that kind of thing. And it becomes really extremely useful. But when a service provider is developing an application, they might just be thinking about kind of like, you know, just a narrow set of features that they need and a narrow set of pieces of data that they want to be able to let the user actually put input into the system. But if the user can then say, I just want to add something else, like how many strings were on my guitar? Was it 12 or was it 6? And what was the tuning on my guitar? Was it dadgad? You know, so those kind of things might not have been thought about by the service provider. But if we have augmented data, then we've got the freedom to do that. And that becomes a lot easier if the user, the end user, is in control of the interface, that they can actually create those extra columns in your Excel spreadsheet, essentially.
Exciting stuff. So, Daniel, where do you see all this going?
Where I see this all going is something slightly unknown. We actually have a competition or a challenge to anyone out there who's especially involved in UX and UI world. And we're calling it Kendra.io Imagine. And we were asking people to imagine what the world would be like if there was more of this kind of technology where people could augment data, where you could be in control of your data, where you could essentially create your interface in real time as you're using it. There are so many ways it could go. And I think the first off, we could see a huge amount of mashups between different data sets. And I don't think this in any way replaces shops or services or anything like that. I think this actually makes it easier for people to deal with them. Why would it be detrimental to use a unified interface for your shopping, to let your products go into unified interface? I mean, shops already do that with Amazon and Etsy, as I say. So why not give that control to the end user as well? It's fascinating where it could go.
Let's take a quick break for this message from our sponsor.
Picture this. You are a key decision maker at your credit union. Your tellers are tired of the lengthy KYC process, fraud is a constant worry, and onboarding new members feels like a marathon. But what if there was a way to streamline it all? Enter the Sudo platform. Our reusable credential technology transforms the traditional KYC process, reduces fraud, strengthens communication security, and streamlines member onboarding. With Sudo platform, you can prevent fraud, save time, and create secure digital identities. And the best part? It's built right into your credit union's app. This is more than innovation. It's a commitment to providing your members a rewarding experience. We're live and ready to redefine how you do business. Don't wait. Give your credit union the upgrade it deserves. Identify any member in any channel at any time, all while improving convenience and reducing fraud. To learn more, contact us at sudoplatform.com. That's sudoplatform.com.
What we see a lot of course, because we talk about privacy, of course, all the time on this show. People always say they are interested in being more private and being careful about protecting their data. But when it comes to actual practice, if there's a lot of lift involved, if there's a lot of work on the end user's part, then they typically are like, yeah, but I really like all of the functionality over here with Gmail or something, right? And so it's a tough trade-off for people. But like what you're providing here, if you actually have that privacy pretty much built in, there's not anything extra you have to do, and you're making my life easier, Now that is a true win-win.
Absolutely. The aspects around privacy, the potential is huge. If you could access your email, and this is not totally new, you know, you have an email client where the data is yours and it's stored locally, you know, or even more importantly, it's stored in the place that you choose. So that is also a big aspect of it, maybe on a service provider that you choose or on a server that you own. But in terms of privacy, there's some things that we discovered is that it might just change the relationship between the service provider and the end user, where instead of us filling out their form, they make a question to us and they ask us for the data. And then we hold a list of all the service providers who have our data and the duration for which they have it. And we can check back to see that they've deleted our data when they say they would. And so it just changes the whole relationship. Once I can start to maintain lists of things to do, who has my details, the contracts that I have, and be able to search them and filter them and manage them and update them as well, it really changes the whole paradigm of that customer service provider relationship. So yeah, and obviously that relates a lot to privacy in the sense of I can give you exactly the information I want to give you and also put a time duration on it. And we make an agreement. And so you have to adhere to that agreement legally because it has a duration on it. And that's also, yeah, blowing my mind about how it could change the relationships.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you're in the UK, correct?
I am based mostly in the UK, yes.
And so you're under the GDPR?
We are, yes, I guess, for Europe. Yes, yeah. GDPR here, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and of course, trying to avoid having companies go out there and monetize your data without your permission, which we have that issue here a lot in the States. And so anybody that can come up with a solution to fight back against that, I think is all right in my book.
Big issue that I have is spam. And there's a kind of a middle path. There's the kind of like really robotic spam. And then there's the kind of, well, you know, I got your email from a list and I paid for it. And so I have to find out who are the people that are selling my data, you know, and there are attempts at finding all of these people and listing all of them. But I just want one button that says no thanks. And it sends it out to all of them saying, hey, stop spamming me. Stop selling my name to all of these people. And I think if the technology did that easily enough, then I think it could be enforced more easily too. I think the fact that enforcement is kind of weak is because the technology is not there to back it up. So I think, yeah, all of this methodology of augmented data and the changing of the relationships, changing of the directions of information flow, I think could make it easier for us to actually enforce these ideas that we have.
I think you're totally spot on. A lot of it has to do with just with the infrastructure and also too, I mean, speaking from the States and my perspective, I think a lot of it too is the lawmakers don't necessarily understand the technology. So, you know, you see them interviewing some of the heads of big tech on Capitol Hill. Some of the questions they ask, you're like thinking to yourself, do they even understand what the internet is?
Yeah, no, I've seen a couple of those interviews and sometimes it just goes over my head too. Like just when technology is mixing with policy and it becomes, yeah, very gray areas. And yeah, it's a very slippery area as well because technologists have, big for-profit companies have an aim to maximize their profits. And I'm not in any way an anti-profit kind of person, but I love money. And it's very interesting how it sort of dictates the direction of technology. And when you think about it, the fact that we've got the internet, TCP/IP, HTML, all of these technologies, these basic technologies, they were built by consortiums and they're offered out for free at no license. And I think it's a miracle that they do actually exist. And it's given us this wonderful internet. So I think there's a balance between the what we do with for-profits and what we do with non-profits and building infrastructural stuff like roads and cables and things like that. And what we do with really interesting technology and applications as well.
I guess as we get close to wrapping up too, I was just curious kind of your own day-to-day life and how you manage your privacy. I mean, is it It sounds like it's a little bit easier to do in the UK than it might be over here in the States.
I'm not sure that privacy is easier to do anywhere in particular, actually, because I think we're all under the locked into service providers in the US as much as I am in the UK. And it's still the same issues, putting me on newsletters when I hadn't asked to be put on newsletters and stuff like that. And I actually did say, hey, you know, you're breaking the GDPR. And they said, well, actually, it's different for businesses. So actually, the legal frameworks that were created didn't actually make it easy for businesses to manage, you know, who's spamming them. And I think there's various degrees of privacy concerns. You know, obviously the, on one side, the criminal and the illegal, but still then on just what's kind of just going underneath the radar. And I think if we can get more transparency and openness around what's happening to my data, then yeah, I think that would be a plus.
Yeah, no, 100%. Your website is kendra.io, correct?
Correct. The website is kendra.io.
Anything else you wanted to go over before we go? Anything else you wanted to promote or anything coming down the pike?
Yeah, I would just say, please do get involved. If you're interested in no code or local first or augmented data or privacy or security or just freedom or data autonomy, please do get involved. We're doing some very interesting things. I wake up every morning and I'm super excited about the potential of what we're doing. It's really fascinating. And I don't know fully where it's going. And we need collaborators to work with us to bring interesting ideas that we then work on together. And we're doing that a lot. Actually, I didn't mention that. We're doing that a lot with a number of collaborators in the art world, in the music world. You know, we've got a few shops on board where we're actually building demonstrations about how this could work. And we would love to hear from people who are interested. Maybe they've got a few users that we could test something out with, and that would be great.
I love it. That's Kendra.io, Kendra.io. Daniel, it's been great having you. I'm going to give you all the support I can. I'll be thinking about you, and hopefully you inspire more people to do this, because we need more of you out there fighting for us to fight back against all this surveillance and sharing and selling of our data.
Thank you, Rich. It's been really fun.
Thanks so much.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Privacy Files. If you would like to be on the show, or you know someone who would be a good fit, head on over to privacyfiles.com and submit a guest request. Also, if you're enjoying the content we're cranking out, please consider giving us a 5-star rating in your favorite podcast player. It absolutely makes a difference. In our next episode, we'll have Anonymy Labs' chief financial officer here in studio to talk about fraud in the world of corporate finance and accounting. We'll be talking a lot about AI, including the wild story of a deepfake CFO who defrauded one multinational company out of more than $25 million. Until next time, don't forget, privacy is a human right.